This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. And thanks for joining us as we begin to take aim once again. And as usual, targets are abundant across the spectrum of political activity and cultural demise. I'm joined, as always, by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning, everyone. It's such a beautiful Saturday morning.
And let me, just since I failed to do so, let me also say that I'm Steve Woodward. Happy to be joined by Mr. Hensley again. And let's get right into this week's Taking Aim. Boy, do we have some public enemy numbers 1 and 1A to share with you. Many of us were riveted by the hearings this week, one in the Senate chamber, one in the House. Now, these were previously scheduled hearings, which were intended to allow key members of the intel community to come forward before members of Congress to provide the homeland threat assessment, the overall where do we stand with threats to our homeland by our enemies around the world, and what are we doing to forestall those threats. And so this would have normally been a sort of a rather dry resuscitation of people like Kash Patel, the FBI director, and CIA Director John Ratcliffe, and Director of National Intel Tulsi Gabbard presenting their reports and answering questions from the members. However, owed to the release by Atlantic Magazine editor Jeffrey Goldberg, one of the most corrupt fake journalists in all of the land, and the Atlantic, of course, is the seething pot of contempt for all things Trump, all things MAGA, and is staffed by some of the most elite left-wing agenda-driven journalists on earth, led by Jeffrey Goldberg, and also including people like Bill Kristol and Jonathan Last, as in the first shall be last. So the members of the Trump cabinet, Patel, Gabbard, and Mr. Ratcliffe, are brought before the congressman, and in this case, they're all teed up to tongue lash them about the revelations from Jeffrey Goldberg that he had been inadvertently, apparently, included in their Signal chat group. Signal being the secure app for encrypted texting among individuals who wish to have extra layer of security when they communicate. This chat group had been somehow infiltrated by Goldberg, or he had been allowed in by someone else, knowingly or unknowingly, remains to be seen. Goldberg then proceeds to release in transcript form the communications between Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, Patel, Gabbard, Ratcliffe et al., and others, including White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles, the discussion on their plans to execute a bombing mission to target the Houthi terrorists in Yemen, which was obviously a long overdue military exercise, because the Houthis have been terrorizing our sea channels in the Red Sea and elsewhere for months, going way back into the Biden regime. So this becomes the story du jour that, oh no, this confidential back and forth between these officials has now been revealed by Jonathan Goldberg. The problem is that nothing that was revealed actually derailed or in any way compromised the outcome of the military action directed by Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense. Now, David, you and I are Signal app users.
Yes.
With various groups. Nothing nefarious, of course, just doing our our duties as engaged citizens.
Most everyone under the age 60 uses Signal,
yeah,
to some degree.
So we're familiar with how it works, and the fact is that it's quite clear that there's no way this Jeffrey Goldberg, editor of The Atlantic, just weaseled his way into this Signal group unbeknownst to the other members. It had to have been deliberate on the part of someone. So we've been discussing that with our crack research team here this morning and during yes. show prep. And it appears that something went terribly wrong.
Yes, something went wrong.
And so it's coming to light that an assistant, a top aide to Mike Waltz.
Yes.
And I have to be careful when I say that because it's not Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota. It's Michael Waltz.
Yes.
Who is one of the Trump appointees, and he is director of National Security, the NSA, National Security Agency, for the former Florida congressman, excellent public servant, very conservative, a great pick by all accounts by Trump. He has this top assistant whose name is, I believe, Alex Wong. And now it is coming to light that for whatever reason, TBD, Wong added Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic to this chat group. Unfortunately, none of the other members of the chat group or Wong himself went through the list of participants ahead of this communication exchange to verify that everyone who was in the group was intended to be in the group.
Yes.
And thus, Jeffrey Goldberg finds himself sitting on a veritable jackpot of inside information, none of it particularly classified or top secret at all. But any journalist would have done what Goldberg did, which is to say,
right.
Wow, I got to run with this.
Right.
I got to
report it. Right, correct.
I understand that as a former recovering
journalist. It's kind of their duty, right?
It would be, yes. So Alex Wong is now sort of becoming at the center of this thing. But here's what's even more interesting. Who is the spouse of Alex Wong, David?
My guess is a Biden appointee of some sort.
You would be correct.
Wow. Imagine, figure the odds.
He is married to U.S. Attorney Candace Chu Wong, a Chinese woman who was
something
one of the key...
Wrong.
Something is terribly wrong in Denmark. A Chinese woman who was one of the key attorneys involved in prosecuting, wait for this, the January 6th defendants, those
amazing how that
so-called
happens.
Insurrectionists, many yeah. of whom were thrown in jail without the courtesy of a trial, many of whom did nothing more than enter the Capitol and use their cell phone to record selfies and video. But this Candace Wong, married to a National Security Advisor Deputy Alex Wong, now appears to have had some role in the in this so-called Signal scandal, which is what the mainstream media is calling it. And of course, man, between the media and these members, these Democrat members of this House subcommittee interrogating Gabbard and Kash Patel, the FBI director, and John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, they are in full-blown, unhinged, frothing at the mouth, pearl-clutching. They're clutching everything. Their pearls, their bracelets, their Rolex watches, I mean, everything they can get their hands on, they're clutching. And it got so bad that it finally veered from being interrogatory to comical. And that was left to a congressman from California, no surprise that he would be from California, the 34th District Representative, Jimmy Gomez. Jimmy has been a congressman for about 8 years, representing the 34th. Where is the 34th, you ask? Downtown Los Angeles. Okay.
There's a great place.
So Jimmy Gomez decides that he is going to take the opportunity with the microphone and the cameras focused on him to turn this hearing into something of a clown show to get himself some clicks on social media and to get himself on the all of the platforms as a hero of the left and a hero of the anti-Trump movement. Jimmy Gomez apparently had witnessed a video clip of Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, who was not in this hearing, but who had previously, in the days prior, attended some type of a national global security conference in Europe. And he was at a podium taking questions from the media, at which point he reached down and picked up a plastic cup of water and began to take a few sips from it, as is often the case when you're addressing the media.
Yeah, the staff placed a glass of water there in case any of the speakers, you know, had a dry mouth or wanted to drink, like happens at every podium.
The media takes this clip and decides that they think there's a possibility that Hegseth was actually knocking back a watered-down cocktail that he had just helped himself to prior to going into the press conference. An absurd notion, but of course...
These people are insufferable.
This goes back to the character assassination that took place during Hegseth's confirmation hearings, when all they could talk about was unsubstantiated rumors that he had had some kind of a problem with alcohol abuse, that he was frequently intoxicated while on the set of Fox and Friends on the Fox News Channel, where he was formerly employed. And all these kinds of things in trying to completely shatter his character. Well, they failed. He was confirmed. He's a highly qualified Secretary of Defense who has already shaken it up at the Pentagon big time. And now we've got a bunch of dead Houthi terrorists as part of his initiative, working with the intel community. But that's not good enough for Jimmy Gomez. Play clip two.
To your knowledge, do you know whether Pete Hegseth had been drinking before he leaked classified information?
I don't have any knowledge of Secretary Hegseth's personal habits.
Director Radcliffe, same question. Yes or no?
You know, no, I'm going to answer that. I think that's an offensive line of questioning. The answer is no. I find it interesting that you want to... No, I'm going to answer. You asked
Director,
me a question you want an answer?
No, listen,
you don't
want to
focus on the good work that the CIA is doing, that the intelligence community...
Director, I reclaim my time. Director, I reclaim my time. Here, I have huge respect for the CIA, huge respect for our men and women in uniform. But this was a question that's on the top of minds of every American, right? He stood in front of a podium in Europe holding a drink. So, of course, we want to know if his performance is compromised.
So
can't make that up.
False premise, right? Just listen to what these people say. First of all, a false premise. Was he drinking when he leaked classified information? Representative Gomez, I don't accept your premise that he leaked classified information. Then repeating falsities like he had a drink on a podium, that's demonstrably false. These people, that's what leftists do, is they lie. They just can't help but lie and make ridiculous false accusations. And by the way, all of America's minds are not wondering whether Secretary of Defense has... Nobody even thought about it before this clown brought it up.
Well, you know,
all of America is on top of everyone's mind. No, it's not.
Well, here's what they ought to be thinking about. Here's what should be top of mind, is how in the hell does Jimmy Gomez hold an elected position in the halls of the United States House of Representatives? Let me tell you a little bit about his 34th district in California. It includes the city of Los Angeles, downtown L.A. Now, here is some data of interest regarding Los Angeles and Jimmy Gomez. And keep in mind, he has been their elected representative since 2017. So he came in the same year that Trump was first elected in 2016 going into 2017. Los Angeles faces a significant homeless crisis. The 2023 Greater Los Angeles Homeless Count, which is the most recent data available, estimates 75,500 homeless individuals in the county, including 46,260 in the city. And officials are working on solutions. But here's the bottom line. Los Angeles County has one of the highest homeless populations in the United States, and a significant portion of the homeless population is unsheltered, with about 70% of the county's homeless living outside in tents or makeshift shelters.
Look, look, look.
So this guy, for the Jimmy Gomez, maybe he needs to, maybe he should help himself to a cocktail because he's presiding over a dumpster fire.
Well, here's my take. First of all, this Gomez guy, I mean, look, representatives reflect their district. I mean, look at nutty Bernie Sanders, and he represents Vermont. I mean, look, he's like the poster child for Vermont. But here's the real story about this. Is he drinking alcohol? You know what? Yes. I hope after putting in a 16-hour day and just, you know, facilitating President Trump's airstrikes against the Houthis, I hope that Secretary of Defense had his feet propped up with a cigar burning, right? A nice little, bourbon or fine bourbon, on the rocks. And he sit back and he texted his fellow government officials, hey guys, here's what's going on, to keep them informed. That's what our senior officials should do.
Absolutely.
I hope he had a cigar and a victory cigar and a victory drink in his hand. I would.
I did, actually. And I'm drinking right now.
Yes.
It happens to be it's purified water. But I did just take a drink, so look out. You don't know what might come out of my mouth. And the backstory on Jimmy Gomez is even more entertaining. Back in 2017, the Los Angeles Times reported this, or maybe it was the Washington Post, same thing. The only Democrat to win a special congressional election this year still hasn't shown up for work more than 3 weeks after winning his race, and more than 6 months after the seat became vacant. Representative-elect Jimmy Gomez won a special election to represent California's 34th congressional district, but says he wants to serve a little bit longer as a California state lawmaker. One of the bills that he ended up missing by not going to Washington and doing his job, this was back in 2017, would target sanctuary cities that are refusing to cooperate in enforcing federal immigration law. Well, guess what Los Angeles is the poster child of? Sanctuary cities. So Jimmy Gomez not only has completely ignored the homeless crisis that grips Los Angeles to this day, but as long ago as 8 years ago, was dodging having to vote in Congress on a bill involving the calling out of and the penalizing of these sanctuary cities, which has only escalated over the last nearly decade to the point where, you know, Los Angeles and California has had multiple incidents of illegal immigrants raping, murdering, and otherwise committing crimes like every day of the week. So that is why Jimmy Gomez has got to be dubiously public enemy number one this week on this Taking Aim program. But there was, as usual, a very strong runner-up. Also a member of Congress. There seems to be a trend here. Also a Democrat. This one in the great state of Texas, a much more desirable destination than California. Her name, and you may have heard of her because she's quite a camera hog, Jasmine Crockett, okay? Not to be confused with Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier,
or the 13 different Jasmines who rotate through down here at Cheetah's club.
Exactly.
Don't confuse her with her, any one of them either.
And I believe there may have been a Disney princess named Jasmine at one point.
Yes.
As well. But Jasmine Crockett is the elected representative of a district in Texas. She's a virulent Democrat. And she, in recent days, has been all over the news for making very disparaging remarks, things that if a Republican said them of a Democrat would cause
rioting in the streets,
vandalism, the burning of vehicles. Oh, wait a minute. They do that anyway.
Spray painting of swastikas.
Yeah. Oh, but wait a minute. They do that anyway. So
where's the peace, love, and Justice Coalition of Southern Pines when people paint swastikas on Teslas, by the way? Shouldn't they be out protesting against Nazi symbolism?
You would think so.
Wait, they support that Nazi symbolism.
Apparently they do. Yeah. You're absolutely right. So Jasmine most recently...
By the way, have I mentioned lately that Levy's on the board of the Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition of Southern Pines?
Robert Levy?
Yes, him and my opponent, the hardcore leftist Democrat, those two were on the board of directors together, the Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition.
Well, we'll have to look into that. We'll
get one of our crack investigative reporters on that.
We could do a whole show on that, I think.
We could do a series, our first mini-series.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jasmine Crockett. Now, she most recently, as we come on the air, has referred to the governor of Texas, a Republican, Greg Abbott, as Hot Wheels. Now, why is that disparaging? Well, for those of you who may not be aware, Governor Abbott has spent most of his life in a wheelchair. He is wheelchair bound. He functions very well in a wheelchair. He is an excellent governor by all accounts of the great state of Texas. She refers to him, just because she can, as Hot Wheels, which, again, if any Republican made a disparaging remark about someone who is physically handicapped, whether they're a public servant or a neighbor or somebody on a school board or anywhere, that would be you would see the mushroom clouds forming on the horizon with the manufactured outrage. But she wasn't done. Prior to her takedown of the governor, Jasmine Crockett also shared with a couple of interviewers how she would respond to an encounter with Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. Play clip 5.
I think that you punch. I think you punch. I think you're okay with you okay with punching. You know, I think, and I love Colin, and I think towards the end he started to punch a little harder. But, like, it's Ted Cruz. I mean, like, this dude has to be knocked over the head, like, hard, right? Like, there is no niceties with him. Like, at all. Like, you go clean off on him, right?
Clean off.
You know, setting aside for a moment the the call for violence against a sitting U.S. senator, I can't help but notice when I heard that clip, her fake manufactured it's the same fake manufactured accent that Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris had. They pull it out to get their street creds.
Especially when they're in like some kind of a Baptist church.
Because what's her background? Didn't she grow up in a private school setting? And don't all interviews with her before she was elected to office or before the last couple of years, she like talks like a normal person?
She grew up in a well-to-do family. She's highly educated. You wouldn't know it. But apparently highly educated, whatever that means, it's not worth much anymore.
It's just a fake accent that she does to pander. No, it's just as fake as Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris's accent. Well, we saw Obama do the same thing.
Yeah, and the only deck that she has on her desk and in her Hermes bag is the deck of race cards. That's the only card game she can play.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. So Jasmine.
No. Fake Hermes bag.
But probably.
Yes. An imitation, counterfeit Hermes bag.
Undoubtedly.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised. Because they're not very smart. A lot of these elected officials are really very dumb. And we must never lose sight of that fact at all levels, federal, state, and local. Present company excluded, of course. So those are our public enemies. I think we have flogged them and feathered and tarred them suitably that we can now move on. But let's go. Let's talk a little bit more about the. Let's talk a little bit more about this Signal group chat and what this portends going forward. You have to assume that whether they want to or not, these members of this group, and by the way, the group was just created because if you look at the name of the group, it is specifically entitled the Houthi, military mission group or whatever Mike Waltz named it. So This is a fairly recently constituted chat group specific to this military action.
Well, what's important about signal groups is whoever creates the group gives it a name, and that's the name that shows up on everyone's signal. So it's not what the reporter named it. It's whoever created the group, whatever they named it. So I didn't pick up on that, but you're right. Somebody created a specific group just for this, and they snuck old Goldberg or Bloomberg or whatever, Goldberg's name on there.
Jeffrey, yes.
And my guess is it was, well, let's go back. Let's look at what sunk Trump the first term, right? It was, he showed up to office, there were immediately all these leaks. Everybody was leaking everything, right? When you looked, when he was down in Mar-a-Lago, and remember he refused government assistance on his transition team because he didn't want the leaks, he didn't want the traitors. There was 100% operational security in Mar-a-Lago. He goes up to D.C., right? And the first month or so, everything operational secret. Then all of a sudden, these Benedict Arnolds, these traitors start showing up. And what they do is they leak. And they leak stuff that's a nothing burger. Well, then the leak becomes the story. But that's the thing about this. So there's actually, one is, you know, let's assume this staffer did this, whose wife was prosecuting J6. He intentionally leaked this, but no one is doubting the fact. There's nothing wrong with government officials communicating via signal. But if they do, that's a public record. No one's disputing that this is a public record.
That's right.
And if it, to the extent that perhaps they discussed classified stuff, right, then it's a classified public record that through some error or intentional act was leaked to the media, got to the media through either an intentional or error. It was a classified document that accidentally got outside of those classified people. There's nothing wrong with this. Now, if they were disputing it wasn't a public record, that would be different. But I haven't heard anyone from the Trump administration say that's not a public record. He shouldn't have done that.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's clear that to the extent that this more than likely was deliberate, the insertion of this mole, Jeffrey Goldberg, into this group, what is coming to light now is that it's obvious that this was all prearranged and orchestrated to provide grounds for this calling for the resignation of Pete Hegseth as defense secretary. They want him gone. And in fact, someone posted on Twitter this morning a screenshot of the talking points, which literally exists. You know, the Democrats send out their morning talking points for all the media and politicians. And if you listen, they all use the same words.
Right.
And in this case, it is that Hegseth must resign or be fired. And it's being repeated up and down the primate food chain of the media and the other Twitterati, as they say.
If you remember, in the Wayback Machine, Rush Limbaugh used to do those. He called them montages. Rush Limbaugh pioneered of gathering up those sound. He did this 30 years ago. He gathered up sound clips of Democrats all saying the same stuff, and he would call it a montage. The great L. Rushbo.
The great one. God, may he rest in peace eternally. Goldberg is the same scumbag, by the way, who wrote a piece alleging that Trump had once referred to members of the military as suckers and losers, which
wasn't true,
was completely disproven. It was never said. It never happened. And yet he got so much traction for that for so long that, like most Democrats, if you tell them something enough times, they'll just believe it because it comes from their beloved media source.
Isn't it amazing how that guy, one of the most anti-Trump journalists, which is really saying something, how he magically got added to this signal group by this staffer whose wife was a Biden appointee and prosecuted J6ers. That is like just an amazing coincidence, just like this D.C. judge keeps getting assigned all the Trump cases, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, you got to hand it to these people. They are tenacious as can be.
And they're organized.
And it's all gas, no break with them. I mean,
I hope to God Kash Patel finds evidence of a giant conspiracy because these people have been illegally conspiring against the American people for generations.
Let's turn to a soundbite to just get a good sense of just what this Jeffrey Goldberg is all about and why it was not coincidental, almost certainly, that he was in this chat group. Play clip 3.
If this story proves anything, it proves that Democrats and their propagandists in the mainstream media know how to fabricate, orchestrate, and disseminate a misinformation campaign quite well. And there's arguably no one in the media who loves manufacturing and pushing hoaxes more than Jeffrey Goldberg. Goldberg is an anti-Trump hater. He is a registered Democrat. Goldberg's wife is also a registered Democrat and a big Democrat donor who used to work under who? Hillary Clinton. This is the same Jeffrey Goldberg who infamously lied about weapons of mass destruction to get us into the Iraq War, which cost trillions of dollars and thousands of American soldiers. And how else has Goldberg discredited himself? By absurdly claiming that President Trump was Vladimir Putin during the 2016 campaign. By peddling the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax that tried to hijack President Trump's first term. By inventing the suckers and losers hoax to help Joe Biden in the 2020 election. By peddling a hoax about President Trump involving Gold Star families to help Kamala Harris in the 2024 election, which our campaign at the time vigorously denied. Jeffrey Goldberg didn't care.
That, by the way, was the brilliant White House press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, who, you know, if you're going to take her on, you better be prepared because she comes ready to enter the ring and with gloves on. Every day of the week, she is a velvet weapon of mass destruction when it comes to media corruption and media distortion of all things Trump and MAGA. So that was an excellent that was yesterday's press briefing. She came in and laid all that out before she allowed one of the little weasels in the media to ask a single question.
Well, one thing she's right is it clearly demonstrated the left's ability to develop and rapidly execute a misinformation campaign. But that's a core competency of the left, whether it was Adolf Hitler and the Nazis who had Joseph Goebbels, right? Or it was like Stalin and the commies who had Pravda. And, you know, it's just today's leftists have ABC, CBS, PBS, NPR. You know, that's what they do best is misinformation, propaganda. And they have to do that because they have to lie and deceive the people.
Governor Josh Stein has the Raleigh News and Observer and the right. Charlotte Observer. And
right.
It's when you have a fully compliant information dominant media at your beck and call, it is remarkably easy to be a deranged lefty.
That's why thinking people hang out on X, because there is not censorship on X, and you can get the true, unfiltered, you know, and then you can decide for yourself.
Exactly, and in fact, what we were imparting to you about Alex Wong and his wife was partially reported by an excellent investigative journalist named Laura Loomer.
Yes,
who uses X as her main platform for keeping us informed on what she's working on, you know.
And by the way, she holds our side accountable too.
She does, yeah.
I mean, she's a conservative, but she, you know, much like you and I, and you know, we hold Berger responsible for the nonsense he's doing. You
yeah.
know, Senator Berger and other rhino Republicans. She does the same.
Yeah, I agree. And that gives us, of course, is important in terms of your credibility. Now, we mentioned those congressional hearings earlier, and undoubtedly, absent all of this distraction caused by this signal story, undoubtedly, one of the exchanges of the week would be the one we're going to talk about next, involving, once again, Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, who wore the uniform, who actually was in the reserves, I believe, when she was nominated by Trump to take this position, directing national security. She is a former congresswoman from her home state of Hawaii, a a reformed Democrat. She left the Democrat Party, and when she did, she was very explicit about why she made that decision at the time that she did. She is giving her threat assessment to the members of this committee, this subcommittee on national security, and her job is to sort of lay out the headlines on what her department perceives to be the leading security threats to our homeland and how we are preparing to defend our homeland against them. Along comes the blathering idiot senator from Maine, Angus King. He kind of looks like Colonel Sanders, Colonel Harlan Sanders. Angus King of Maine listens to Tulsi Gabbard's report, and he becomes very agitated, and quite concerned, and he needs to interrogate her more specifically about what he has just heard. Play clip four.
I've been on this committee now for, this is my 13th year. Every single one of these reports that we have had has mentioned global climate change as a significant national security threat, except this one. Has something happened? Has global climate change been solved? Why is that not in this report? And who made the decision that it should not be in the report when it's been in every one of the 11 prior reports?
I can't speak to the decisions made previously, but this annual threat assessment has been focused very directly on the threats that we deem most critical to the United States and our national security. Obviously, we're aware of occurrences within the environment and how they may impact operations, but we're focused on the direct threats to Americans' safety, well-being, and security.
How about how they will impact mass migration, famine, dislocation, political violence, which is the finding, by the way, of the 2019 annual threat assessment under the first Trump administration? You don't consider that a significant national security threat?
For the intelligence community, being aware of the environment that we're operating in is a given. What I focused this annual threat assessment on and the IC focused this threat assessment on are the most extreme and critical direct threats to our national security.
Angus, calm down, okay? Please.
Go. She's 100% correct.
Yes, of course she is.
I mean, you know, sorry that we just no longer believe in your pseudo-junk science that you use to justify increased control of people, unchecked runaway government spending, 98% of which goes to your buddies both in the United States and the communist China, right? And it lessens people's constitutional rights. Never, you know, sorry we sack-gored all that, but we're no longer going to play along with your silliness. That would have been my answer.
And that's why, you know, this is the thing that is so refreshing about all of these Trump picks for these positions, is these are young adults who have, in many cases, worn the uniform, lived in the real world.
Right,
they're not going to sit there and debate with some moronic senator from Maine about why climate change should be, you know, the number one priority of the intel community or of our national defense priorities. I mean, they're just not going to put up with it, and nor should they.
It is so refreshing how young President Trump's cabinet is. And you look, our bench strength is huge. It's the same way here in Moore County. And that was the frustrating thing about Beto and the boys was, you know, what a great farm team that we have here in Moore County that Beto and the crew drove away. But that's not the point. The point is, look at D.C. and whether it's our look at President Trump's cabinet. Look at their average age and look at the Democrats. They got Bernie Sanders. They've got Chuck Schumer. They got Pelosi, you know, that they're just bitterly clinging on to power. They don't have anyone to turn the reins over to.
That's absolutely true.
They've got Jasmine and they've got, you know, these clowns.
Oh, AOC, Ilhan Omar, yeah. And then they've got
the dude in California, Gavin Newsom.
And as they've been cratering, the polls show the Democratic Party is cratering in terms of its approval ratings. Who do they send out as their poster boy for hope and change? Bernie Sanders is out on the road.
Right. right.
Literally out on the road doing speeches, and he's 80-something years old, and he hates America. But other than that, nothing wrong with the guy. Let's shift gears quickly. You know, this past week has more or less been the five-year anniversary of the onset of all the COVID-related lockdowns. Actually, it started here in North Carolina on the 17th. I remember it because it was St. Patrick's Day. But in other municipalities and states, the lockdown phenomenon was only starting in the past week, the week of roughly the 20th, the 22nd of March. And then it really was ramping up during that time. Well, wouldn't you know that even though we're years removed from all of that that horror show and that trampling of our constitutional rights and the destruction of people's businesses and lives, wouldn't you know that it's come to the attention of the Trump team, the Department of Government Efficiency, that there is still $11.4 billion, billion with a B, that has been yet to be allocated for COVID-related research and programs.
Someone should notify Asheville so they could build a couple more outdoor toilets for homeless people. Did you see that?
Wouldn't you like to direct some of that money, even a fraction of it, to relief?
Asheville spent $500,000 of COVID money. $500,000. Asheville, North Carolina, $500,000 of COVID money to build one toilet for homeless people. You know, they could probably build 20 of them with a few billion dollars.
But here's the story, and here's how it's developing. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says it is going to begin clawing back this COVID pandemic funding north of $11 billion. So how does the local media react here in North Carolina? The Raleigh News and Obfuscator, or Observer as some call it, the NNO, which is no, they say no to anything that is sensible or fiscally responsible. For the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, this cut will mean more than 80 job losses and at least $100 million in funding cuts. Well, okay.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. So, wait. We could squander government money that we don't have, that we're borrowing from our great-great-great-grandchildren.
Correct.
Or we could keep 80 jobs that are no longer needed because COVID thing is over, right?
But North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services officials called the termination of the grants abrupt and immediate and said they were very worried because a lot of the work they're doing with this money is still ongoing to determine the depth of impact of COVID-19. Well, I don't need $11 billion to tell you the depth of impact.
Right. Loss of rights. Showing everybody that the government would not, that there would be little resistance to the government, you know, like taking away and usurping everyone's constitutional right of assembly and freedom of movement and whatnot.
Right, correct.
The damage, I mean, I could just, I mean, send me $100 and I'll take an hour and I'll type up a report and I'll send it in.
And along those lines, here's a related story, which we can easily transition right into this. Great news this week out of the North Carolina Supreme Court. They were asked to review a case involving a teenage boy and his mom in Guilford County, North Carolina, which is the Greensboro area. In 2021, this young man, Tanner Smith, was a member of the Western Guilford High School football team. It was August of 21, so they were just getting back to school, and the school year was in front of them, and the football team was undoubtedly beginning its practices for the coming season. An outbreak of COVID is reported within the team, so they begin to ask the players to report to these various facilities to be tested for COVID. Young Tanner Smith dutifully goes to a facility to be tested for COVID. He walks in and observes that not only are they providing tests, they are providing shots, the COVID mRNA jabs, which are not vaccines but are often mischaracterized as such. Tanner was not happy at the sight of this because he and his mom had already decided that he would not be vaccinated under any circumstances, a healthy 14-year-old athlete. And this, of course, was the travesty of the time, is that these health officials were aggressively encouraging healthy children, athletes,
who
and others.
It was obvious that they were not at risk.
Absolutely. But, you know, that was common sense, and that was completely taboo at this point in time in August of 21. So the clinician at this testing location asks the young man if he wishes to have the COVID jab, and he says no. He says, well, I'm going to have to call your mother because she's the one who from whom we need consent. They attempt to reach his mother. They fail to reach her. He says, I don't want the jab. And another clinician now famously says, in words that will live in infamy, give it to him anyway.
Even after they acknowledge they needed to get consent from his mother.
Correct. Yeah. The case ends up in the Supreme Court after lower courts had ruled that she could not sue the school board and the entity that was providing the shots, the tests and the shots. The Supreme Court, by a 5-2 vote, overruled that.
Yes.
Just earlier this week.
Yes.
And now Tanner Smith and his mom are free to take legal action against these people who violated his constitutional rights and his medical liberty by can you imagine just saying, kid, you know, shut up and take the shot.
Here's
and that was the mindset at the time.
No,
that was the mindset.
No. It's still the mindset that we have stomped out in Moore County, but that mindset's alive and well in other counties. Most counties, most school districts, even in North Carolina, truly believe that the school has more power and control over their students than their parents. I mean, you know, but from the grace of God, I'm here to tell you, shots were not mandated in Moore County School. Moore County School did not mandate the clot shot. But I can tell you this, had Helena Wallen Miller and Betty Brown got reelected, and the other guy that was running, I forget his name, faceless dude, had they got reelected, then the central office was chomping at the bit to mandate the COVID-19 vaccine. Had Helena Wallen Miller, Betty Brown, and the other dude, who, by the way, they're the ones who caused the decline of Moore County Schools. They implemented these woke, Moore County Schools was great. They implemented this woke strategic plan and then started putting muscle behind it and doing all the woke crap. They got tossed out on their ears, but had they got reelected, I guarantee you that the clot shot would have been mandated and Moore County Schools would have been facing similar lawsuits. This is the chickens coming home to roost.
Entirely. And by the way, a study came out this week, here 5 years after the onset of COVID, that indicates that a research group in Spain has determined that immunity reactions to repeated mRNA jabs are linked to what? A higher risk of COVID. A new paper finds that more shots equal more antibodies and more COVID cases. And by the way, that's how vaccines are supposed to work, isn't it?
Wasn't Big Pharma brilliant? Let's take advantage of this. Let's sell trillions of dollars worth of vaccines to the government. Vaccines which actually cause the vaccine to be needed even more.
You're absolutely right. It's
in
nuts.
Perpetuity.
By the way, you mentioned earlier Senator Phil Berger, who represents part of Guilford County. And is the Senate president and is a very entrenched machine politician in the General Assembly. Many people feel that his time should be up and that in 2026 he needs to face a primary challenger. And wouldn't you know it, one has come along. His name is Sheriff Sam Page.
Yahoo!
He has been the sheriff in Rockingham County, North Carolina, which is up in the vicinity of Berger's district, adjacent
North
to Guilford.
North Central,
North Carolina. Yes. Sam Page.
Yahoo!
Sam Page is as solid a law enforcement figure as they get. He is a ardently conservative person. In fact, in 2020, he was one of Donald Trump's North Carolina field directors. Helping to to raise money and get out the vote for Trump's reelection effort in 2020. He has declared that he is seeking to primary Phil Berger next year for the Senate position.
Can't wait.
And he recently spent a little time being interviewed by a friend of ours on her podcast, Play Clip 5.
Now, we know that federal agencies are not allowed to commandeer local and state LEOs for their own purposes, right? So we know that governor, for instance, and we've had leftist governors now, a streak of them for the last 16 years. We know that our governor is left wing, and we know that the feds won't be able to force us to do things. Here's what I'm getting at. The state law that Berger's trying to pass and others are trying to pass that would close loopholes, that would force ICE or to force sheriffs to cooperate with ICE, that's just now coming out. So your opponent is just now bringing that forward.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Wouldn't it have made more sense to do that when Biden opened the floodgates? Wouldn't it have been more sensible to do that in 2021, right after Biden got into office? Why is he waiting now?
I think it had been made more sense to go back about 2011. We had the majorities. We had the leadership in the House and Senate. And North Carolina, we could have veto override on these issues. But why? That's the question, is why is it coming about now? Well, I want to tell you something. Since you brought it up, I'm going to tell you something. I saw an article that I was reading where in 2023, Senator Berger said he would not endorse one president or any other person running in the presidential primary. That was in 2023.
Wow. Well, that says it all right there, doesn't it?
I can tell you this. If I wasn't on the school board, I would move to Berger's district and vote against him. I think it's everybody's duty in North Carolina to move to Berger's district and vote him out of office.
Well, and let's not forget, last year we couldn't get a budget agreement up in Raleigh.
Because he wanted a casino in his district. Yeah. He wanted a full-up casino in his district and medical marijuana. And that guy is the senior elected Republican state official. He needs to go.
Yeah, and he wields unbelievable power up there. Many, many of his fellow lawmakers bow to him for whatever reason. I guess because he makes sure that they get what they ask for when it comes time to put the hand out and bring home the pork and the bacon. But anyway, it's really, really good news. Keep an eye on the campaign of Sam Page. And if you have an extra dollar or two, go online.
Pull out the checkbook. Pull out the credit card. Reach in the safe and pull out the gold bars. But my God, support this man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important to keep an eye on these races, even when they're not in our own legislative districts. Well, let's look ahead to the coming week. Needless to say, the tariff hysteria will continue. Trump has announced this past week that the auto tariffs are going to begin. I think that they are overdue. And, of course, they will cause some disturbance and disruption in the markets. But, you know, when you're trying to undo decades of being ripped off by our trade adversaries, this is a necessity. Up in Raleigh, you're going to see some gnashing of teeth about the return of a bill that will require in state-funded institutions and schools that boys use boys' rooms when they need to go to the bathroom, and girls use girls' rooms.
So is Sandhills going to bring Dempsey back so that he can defy that law too?
Well, he might.
Or was it only George Little who let the Sandhills president get away with defying state law?
Well, we shall see. But heads are already exploding about that. Also, locally, you will see heads beginning to get steam rising,
expanding,
and whatnot, because our very own Senator Tom McGinnis is sponsoring a bill that would restrict the ability of municipalities to limit short-term rentals. Don't you know?
Good. We need freedom. Property owners have rights.
I think that is an overdue bill, and of course, locally here, especially in Pinehurst, the short-term rental crazies are going to be.
I almost said the Nazi.
You almost said that. Oh, well, they are. They are, that's for sure. But you know what? We're not going to take it anymore. And that's the bottom line. Everybody, we appreciate you joining us once again here on our weekly program every Saturday at 11 a.m. exclusively on WEEB. He's David Hensley. I'm Steve Woodward.
And we're taking aim.
Once again, join us again next week.